How many of you this morning are willing to stand up for what is right? How many of you are willing to do that? Are you willing to stand up for what is right? And I could ask you, if you're willing to do that, to actually stand up, but I won't have you do that right now if you don't want to. But are you willing to stand up for what is right? This is a world that is filled with much sin, with a lot of spiritual darkness, with wickedness and evil. And as we live in a world like this, are we willing to stand up for what is good and right and holy? As we live in this lost world, there are many sinners, many lost sinners, that would like to pull us away from what is right. There are even perhaps some believers that are not walking with the Lord that would like to pull us away from doing what is right. The pressures to compromise can be very strong. The lure to disobey God to fulfill the desires of our sinful flesh, it can be very strong. It can be rather appealing at times. There are times whenever the powers that be, whether it be somebody in government or the boss at the job, there are times when the powers that be command us or tell us to do something that is wrong. Are we willing to stand up for God and do what is right? The question that each of us must answer today, the question that each of us must answer on a daily basis is, will I stand up for what is right? Will I resist the pressure to disobey God? Will I accept the consequences if I do stand up for what is right? Will I willingly accept those consequences? But what are some of the consequences for me or for you if you actually stand up for what is right, even when the pressure is against you to do what is wrong? What are some of the consequences? Will I willingly accept lawsuits if I stand up for what is right? Am I willing to face that? Am I willing to face financial hardship because I stand up for what is right? That's a question we have to answer for ourselves, right? Am I willing to face the consequences? Am I willing to go to prison for standing up for what is right? We have to ask ourselves that. A lot of times we don't even think of that because we live here in the United States of America, but am I willing to go to prison to stand up for what is right? Am I willing to endure all sorts of persecution because I am committed to God? And perhaps the final question is, am I willing to die for what is right? Am I willing to die for what is right? What is the level of our commitment? You know, it's one thing to lose money because we're standing up for what is right. It's another thing to lose our lives because we're committed to God. Our money, our houses, our treasures, our freedom, our lives, are we willing to give up these things for God and for our commitment to Him? Will we obey God no matter the consequence? Will we sacrifice all to be true to the name of God and the name of Jesus Christ? Now, many of us here in the United States, in this day and age, many of us will never have to face the situation where we have to decide whether we stand up for what is right or face the consequence of going to prison or even losing our own life. But perhaps there is a day in the future, even here in these United States of America, when we will be faced with the consequence of prison or even death if we stand up for what is right, if we remain committed to God. There are believers in other areas of the country that on a daily basis are faced with the consequences of standing up for what is right, and they have made the decision to be loyal to God no matter what. Now, as we search the pages of Scripture, as we read through those pages, we find many good examples of those who have stood up for what is right, those who are committed to God no matter what, even if there are serious consequences to their obedience to God. We find an example in Daniel chapter 3, and I invite you to turn there with me this morning, Daniel chapter 3. If you're using one of our pew Bibles, it's page 1021. And this morning we want to follow the example of three godly young men. Their names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those are the names given to them by their Babylonian captors. Their Hebrew names were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But these three young men stood up spiritually as well as physically for what is right. We can learn from their good example. First of all, as we look at verses 1 through 7, we're going to consider the extreme pressure that was placed upon these three young men, and this pressure was put on them so that they would disobey God. Let's look at verse 1 to begin with of chapter 3 of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 80 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So this is giving some of the background of what is going to happen a little bit later on in the passage. Now, if you've been with us during the time that we've studied the book of Daniel thus far, or perhaps even from your past background, you realize who Nebuchadnezzar is. He's the king of the mighty empire of Babylon at this point in time. He's the mightiest person on earth, humanly speaking. And very recently in the past, no doubt, this king, King Nebuchadnezzar, had a dream. It's a dream that troubled him greatly. It's a dream that Daniel, one of the exiles that was living in Babylon, he's from Judea though, Daniel declared to King Nebuchadnezzar his dream and the meaning of his dream. Now in this dream, King Nebuchadnezzar had seen this great gleaming image. No doubt it was in the shape of a man, and the head was of gold, and the chest and the arms were of silver, the stomach area and the thighs were of brass or bronze, and the legs were of iron. The feet were made of iron and hardened clay. And as he was fixated on this image, it was this huge, awe-inspiring vision or image that he saw. And as he was looking intently at this image, he saw that there was a rock that was cut out of a mountain, but it wasn't cut out with human hands. And this huge rock struck the image at the feet, and the feet were destroyed. And when the feet were destroyed, the whole image turned into dust, and the wind blew it away. And that rock became a huge mountain that filled the whole earth. Now Daniel, a man of God, told Nebuchadnezzar, this pagan king, that the image that he saw in his dream represented various kingdoms. And the rock that destroyed the image was the kingdom of God that would be established and would fill the earth, and it would never be displaced. And of all the kingdoms represented in that image of various metals, Nebuchadnezzar was that head of gold. Can you imagine how that dream would have affected Nebuchadnezzar? Even before he knew the meaning of the dream, he was very troubled at the meaning or at the significance of it. And it makes us wonder, chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had this dream of a great image made of various metals, and he was represented by the head of gold. It makes you wonder that if Nebuchadnezzar now in chapter 3 is making his own image, a towering image, it makes you wonder that if what he saw in his dream was the pattern for the image that he is now going to make in chapter 3 of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold. Its height was 80 cubits. The breadth thereof 6 cubits, he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the image was made of various metals. The image that Nebuchadnezzar made was all of gold, probably not solid gold, probably was just gold plated, but it was quite the foreboding image. It was 90 feet high. It was 9 feet wide. How tall is that? Well, imagine in your mind a 9-story building, and that's approximately how high this image would have been. Probably it was the base included along with the image, but that's quite the formidable structure, isn't it? And it's gleaming in the sun, made out of gold. It was constructed in this plain of Dura. We don't know exactly where this plain is, but probably not too far away from the capital city of Babylon. Well, we continue to read in verses 2 and 3 about the dedication of this great image. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So Nebuchadnezzar has spent who knows how much money and how much time into the construction of this great image. Now he calls all of his important governmental officials. He calls them to stand before this wonder. It's not a wonderful, it's a wonder of a spectacle. this great image. He has the princes come to the dedication of this image, the satraps. These would be the rulers over large areas of ground, larger divisions of the empire. There were the governors or the prefects. These are high-ranking officials that are directly responsible to the satraps. We have the captains or the governors, those who are administrators of small regions, like the region of Judea would have been overseen by this governor or captain. We have the judges that are summoned, those who are advisors. We have the treasurers summoned. We have the counselors or the judges, the sheriffs or the magistrates. There's a reference to all the rulers of the provinces or all of the other provincial officials. So imagine in your mind, if there was anybody important in the Babylonian Empire's government, they were there, no doubt, at the dedication of this image. Hundreds upon hundreds of officials, they were gathered together before this massive golden structure. They're there to dedicate the image. Well, what's involved in this dedication we find in verses 4 through 6. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Nebuchadnezzar has gathered together all of the important governmental officials. He also has gathered together what we would call an orchestra, people that would be playing various instruments. Of course, many of these instruments we don't recognize. There are those who played the cornet or the horn. Others played the flute or what we'd consider the pipe. Others had a harp or perhaps it's the instrument called a zither, an instrument probably that had between 3 and 12 strings. There are the players of the sackbut or a lyre. It's a small triangular instrument with 4 strings. Others played the psaltery or the harp, another stringed instrument. Lastly, there was the dulcimer, or perhaps referring to the pipes, or the bagpipes. Then there are other instruments included as well, so quite the orchestra. And whatever this impressive orchestra played, the command was, everyone that was standing before the golden image now had to bow down and worship that golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Here is this 9-story-high image. All of these people gathered before it. They're standing before it now. They have to fall down and worship it. That's the command of the king. If you didn't fall down and worship it, what happened? The king decreed, you'll be thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Now, this furnace probably had been built for the construction of the great image. Temperatures in such a furnace probably could reach up to 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is no primitive, you know, little furnace, you know, or kiln. No, this is quite the large furnace or kiln. It's a furnace that could melt metal. And if anyone would be cast into it, it would be a terrible death. As I read through the commentaries, one of the commentaries likened it to a modern lime kiln. So you'd have an opening on the top. You could put the materials into the kiln through that top entrance, and then there would be a large opening at the bottom that you could withdraw the burned substances, and then it probably would be approached by a plain of some sort or a hill. So there's an opening at the top, and then there would be an opening at the bottom as well, and it probably was built into a hill or some sort of thing like that, or at least an inclined plane that you could reach the top. So the proclamation had been made. The king's wishes had been made very clear. Everybody had to submit to the king's wishes to bow down before this massive image and worship it. Otherwise, you faced certain death. Everybody had to submit to it. So the moment the orchestra played, bow down and worship the image. If you don't bow down, you're going to die. You're going to be thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Look at verse 7. Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Now, what do you tell me this morning, whether there is a lot of pressure there to obey or just a little bit of pressure? What do you think? There is a lot of pressure on these men to do as the king commanded. You fall down and worship this image, otherwise you're going to die. You're going to be thrown into that burning fiery furnace. Now, for most of the men gathered, It was no problem at all for them to bow down and worship this image, because these were pagan people from all different types of nations, and it was common for them, it was part of their lifestyle, to worship idols. That was how the religion was. So most of the governmental administrators, they had no problem falling down before this image. What's this image? What's this god? In addition to other gods, it's nothing to fall down and worship this god. But among these governmental leaders, there were three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were exiles, captives, from Judea. And these men worshipped the true and the living God, the God of the heavens. And these men were committed to God and his word. And they knew what God had commanded in the word. We read in what is commonly known as the Ten Commandments, Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 5. This is what God commanded these three young men, as well as many others in Israel. I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. So these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were servants of the Most High God. They knew what God had commanded. You worship me and me alone. Don't fall down before other gods. Don't make for yourself an idol of any sort. A graven image or a molten image. Don't bow down before them. Don't do it. That's what God told the Israelites. And these three young men, they were serious about what God had said. They were committed to worshiping God alone. They would never bow down and worship this great image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they did not bow down to the image. They didn't bow down to it, even though they knew the consequence of not bowing down was certain death. Now, it didn't take long for word to reach the king that there were three young men that had not bowed down. Three young men that had not obeyed the king's decree. The report got back to the king that these three young men had stood in defiance of the king's order. They had refused to worship the image. And as we come to verses 8 through 12, we read of the public resolve of these three young men to obey God rather than man. Look at verse 8. Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee, they serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. These three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these were men that had prominent positions in the Babylonian government. They were rulers in the province of Babylon, the most important province of the entire empire. And I think that there were some, in fact, I can say with certainty, there were people that were jealous of the position that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had. They wanted their place. They didn't like the fact that these Jewish exiles had positions of great authority in the empire. So probably it was some of these jealous people that came before the king and said, do you realize there are three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They've disobeyed you. They haven't bowed down before the image that you've erected. They're not serving your gods. And it's very true. These three young men were not serving the god that Nebuchadnezzar had erected, that idol. They were not going to bow down and worship the image. They hadn't done it and they would not do it again, whenever given the opportunity to do so again. Now, whether they disregarded the king, that's a matter of opinion. They disregarded the king's command, but yet they respected the king and his position of authority. But now the king knows there are three men that disregarded him and his command. Look at verses 13 and 15. What happens now? Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? So earlier, as we think about the decree of the king to everybody that was standing before the image, there was great pressure put on everybody, bow down and worship this image, otherwise you're going to die. But now we have these three young Jewish men. They had stood up, they had remained standing, whenever everybody else had bowed down. Now, these three young men standing in the midst of this crowd, they probably see guards coming from where the king is seated. These guards or soldiers are coming, and I'm sure that these young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I'm sure they realized these soldiers are coming for us because we have gone against the king's order. Can you imagine how they would have felt? Were they fearful? Were they confident because they were trusting in God? Who knows how they felt? But here they are, seeing a group of guards coming after them. Surely they knew that they were coming to bring them before Nebuchadnezzar. So here they are, they're ushered before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king asks them, Is this report that I hear true? Have you not bowed down before my image? Are you not worshiping my gods? Have you really stood up and remained standing even whenever the orchestra played? And the king, it seems that he didn't even wait for a response. He said, I'm going to give you a second chance. I'm going to have the orchestra play again. And if you bow down, everything is going to be just fine. But if not, things will not go well for you. You will be cast into the burning fiery furnace. See, Nebuchadnezzar was a man that wanted things done his way. He expected his orders to be obeyed. And so whenever he heard word, these three men hadn't obeyed, he was furious. He was angry beyond imagination. And he said, if you don't bow down, if you don't take the second chance, you're going to die. And who is that God that's going to deliver you out of my hands? You see his pride lifted up to heaven here. He said, nobody, not even your God, is able to deliver you out of my almighty hand. That's what Nebuchadnezzar was thinking now. That's what he was saying. The king thought he was in absolute control. He was assured that his command would be kept. If these three went against him again, no one would stop him from killing them. Not even their God could stop him. You see the pride of this king. What a taunt against the true and the living God. But you see how much pressure is laid upon these men. These men who are probably just in their early 20s. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There are only two options. Bow down or die. Seems to be the only two options, humanly speaking. So how strong is the resolve of these men? If we were in their place, if we knew the options, either bow down or die, what would we do? What would we do when the orchestra started playing again? Would we remain true to God? Would we remain standing no matter what, even if it meant being thrown into that fiery furnace? Or would we compromise and bow down? Would we cave into the pressure? Would we be willing to die to remain true to God? Where are we at? Of course, we're not in that situation, but how would we respond? Well, the commitment of these young men is made very clear in the following verses. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. The three men respond to the king. They say, we don't need to give you an answer concerning this. They're saying, what you've heard is true. We did not bow down before the image. And be clear with this. We want to make it clear. We're not going to offer a defense. We're not going to offer an apology. We're just going to stand true to God. We're not going to bow down before your image. We're not going to take your second chance offer. We're never going to bow down before that image. We're going to be remaining true to God even to death. Now these young men, they were certain in their hearts and in their minds that their God was all powerful, they were certain in their minds and in their hearts that God was more than able to deliver them from that burning fiery furnace. He knew that he was able. But in their minds, they didn't know whether their God had that plan or not. Would they be spared from death or would they not? But what was clear, what they were certain of, they would not bow down and worship the idol. They would remain true to God. That's a commitment to do what is right. That's a commitment when the pressure was hard and it was put upon them very strong. Do we have a commitment like that? Are we willing to die for our obedience to God? By God's grace, we will remain committed like that. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was not a man that was accustomed to people going against his wishes. And these three men had stood up to him. And Nebuchadnezzar was thinking, these men are going to pay the price. Look at verse 19. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Nebuchadnezzar, he was talking with these three young men. He had given them a second chance opportunity. And whenever he heard their response, he burned with fury. His face changed. You could just see the anger and the wrath and his temper just flared. Yes, he had tried to reason with them, but they didn't accept the offer. And Nebuchadnezzar became furious. In verse 19, it says he became full of fury. That wrath became burning hot. And so hot was his fury that he commanded his men, make that furnace 7 times hotter than it normally would be. The idea is, make it as hot as it possibly can be. Put it at full heat. He wanted them to pay. He wanted them dead because of their insubordination. How dare would they go against him, the king? How dare would they reject his command? They have to pay the price. Then he commanded some soldiers, the mightiest men in his army, bind these men, take them to the furnace, throw them in. So they bound them. They bound them in all of their clothes, and probably these were some formal clothes, some expensive clothes, and they bound them in those clothes. And here are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego cast into the midst of the fiery furnace. You might think, well, maybe it wasn't all that hot. It was hot because the men, these valiant warriors of Nebuchadnezzar's army, what happened to them as they cast in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They died because of the flames. And probably the heat as well, but the flames killed them. That's how hot and how the flames were burning in that furnace. The three mightiest men, or however many soldiers, died because of the heat of that furnace and the flames of that furnace. And now our Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were thrown into the furnace. Now they had no guarantee that they would be spared from death. They were willing to die in order to obey God. These men had their priorities straight. They knew what really mattered, and they stood up for that. The question is, do we have priorities like they had? Are we willing to die for our obedience to Christ and to God? So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego trusted God with their very lives. They committed themselves to him fully, and God was pleased with their faithfulness, and God blessed them. Look at verses 24 through 27. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste and spake, and said unto his counselors, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire, and the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Can you imagine the shock of King Nebuchadnezzar? He was so angry, and he was so eager to see these three rebellious men die, to be incinerated in that furnace. So he found a great place to watch, and he was waiting, and he saw them be thrown into the furnace, and he saw his soldiers die because of the heat and the flames. And here he was, maybe rubbing his hands together, waiting for the spectacle of these men being incinerated in the furnace. Well, the king did see something amazing, something quite out of the ordinary, something supernatural, because as he looked into that door of the furnace, he saw not three men, but four men. And these men weren't writhing in pain. No, they were walking around. Maybe they were talking. Maybe they were just strolling around in the midst of that furnace that is maybe 1,800 degrees or even hotter. They're just walking around freely. So the ropes that had bound them had burnt. Now, as Nebuchadnezzar looked at those men, he probably recognized three of them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But he says there's a fourth man, and he asks his counselors, didn't we throw three men in? I see four men now. And the fourth one looks like the Son of God. Now, keep in mind, Nebuchadnezzar was a pagan. In his mind, it can be translated either way, he could be saying, I see one of the sons of the gods. I see a son of the gods. So he could be saying, I recognize this one as deity, but not necessarily as the Son of God. But I do believe, regardless of what Nebuchadnezzar thought, whether it's just he thought that it was one of the sons of the gods, or whether he thought it was the Son of God, I do believe that this is the Son of God, Jesus Christ, before he became man. He was walking. He was there with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. His providential care, his hand of protection, protected Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego there in the midst of that incinerator of a furnace. He had come to deliver Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from certain death. So it was apparent that the three men weren't dead. What does Nebuchadnezzar do? He calls out to them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out of the furnace. Come here. Come to me. Notice, what do? They obey. They obey the king's command, because this time the command of the king wasn't anything against God. This was a command that could be obeyed. He's the king. He says, come out of the furnace. What do? They come out of the furnace. Now with the king are some very prominent officials and some of his advisors. And what do? They gather around them. The ropes had been incinerated. But as they look at the hair of their heads, now it's the first thing that would get singed if you're too close to a hot fire. It's your hair, right? Their hair had not been singed. Not even one hair had been singed. Their clothes had not been burnt. Their clothes would have gone up immediately in flames, but they had not gotten burnt at all. They didn't even have the smell of smoke on them. And you know what it's like being around a furnace or a campfire or anything. You reek like smoke if you get too close, right? If that smoke comes in contact with you. But they didn't even have the smell of smoke on them. God had saved them. And Nebuchadnezzar recognized that. Now, Nebuchadnezzar had taunted earlier, what God is there that will deliver these men out of my hands? Well, God, the true God, the only God, the God of heaven, had indeed delivered them. God showed himself to be in control, not Nebuchadnezzar. God was the ultimate king. Now, how would you respond if you witnessed something like Nebuchadnezzar witnessed? Well, Daniel tells us in verses 28 through 30, this pagan king, this one who is so proud, now recognizes the God of heaven, the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He praises the God of heaven, and he rewards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Verse 28, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who had sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So here's this pagan king, and he recognizes the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the God of heaven. He is a powerful God. He has just delivered his servants. As he called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego out from the furnace, he recognized that they were the servants of the Most High God. And now as he praises God, He praises God as one who is faithful to his servants, one who delivers his servants from death. Yes, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were committed to God. They wouldn't bow down to the image. They trusted in him. They went against the king's word. And in fact, the king's word had been changed, had been altered. The king wanted them dead, but what happened? They were protected by God, kept it alive. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were so committed to God, they stood up for what was right, even when their life was on the line. So Nebuchadnezzar makes a decree. Before he made the decree that these men would be incinerated, but God changed everything, didn't he? And now Nebuchadnezzar, pagan as he was, made a decree concerning the Most High God, the God of heaven. He says, if anyone says anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he's going to be dismembered. His house is going to become a heap of rubble, a dunghill. And then the king promotes Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, making them even higher in the province than what they had been before. The king realized he was not all-powerful. God was all-powerful. At least that's what he should have realized. He realized that only this God could deliver in that way, delivering from that incinerator of a furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These are three godly young men. Keep in mind, they were probably just in their early 20s. But these men, before this event ever happened, they were committed in their minds and in their hearts, we will worship God alone. We are going to live for him. We're going to keep his commands. They were firm in their minds and in their hearts to obey God. And whenever a hard time came, whenever the trial came and the command went forth, bow down to this image, they stood up. They stood up for what was right, even when their lives were put on the line, even though the command was death if they did not bow down. The question for me and the question for you is, are you willing to stand up for what is right? Are you committed to God no matter what? May we have such boldness to stand up for what is right no matter what. Are we willing to give up our jobs, or our houses, or our families, our freedom? Are we willing to give up our very lives to stand up and obey God? May we be men and women who stand up for God in the face of all opposition. May no pressure be so great that we forsake God, that we forsake his commands. May we be men and women like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.